Blog Talk Radio.
Permit me to introduce myself. The name is Mr. Kick. I dwell in a dark dominion, away down by the river Styx. The devil has sent me here because I'm full of wicked tricks. And I'm such a popular fellow among all you lunatics. A course in ruination from the devil's text. To fools who can't withstand temptation, step right up, you're next. I hail from a hollow hellhole down along the river Styx. Allow me to introduce myself. The name is Mr. Kicks. When an old wolf starts prowling out among the young lambs, howling, don't you know he's looking for kicks? When a young cat full of sly tricks spends his evenings chasing fly chicks, 10 to 1 he's looking for kicks. Kicks is always in demand, cause kicks is full of fun and laughter. Lots of folks get out of hand because it's only kicks they're after. Shady lady and her lover operating undercover. She knows sin and virtue don't mix. Her mama raised her prim and proper, but now wild hawk bills couldn't stop her when she's on a manhunt for kicks. Yeah, yeah, looking for kicks. Just kicks, nothing but kicks. I'm Satan's simple servant sent to get you in a fix. So look me up just anytime. The name is Mr. Name is Mr. Name is Mr. Kick.
We're opening up our anti-drug campaign tonight. How you doing, boys and girls? Welcome to the Spirit of America Party and the Spirit of America Party book and radio show. I was listening to Steve Malzberg tonight, and I got to give him a shout-out because he really explained what abortion is all about, partial birth abortion, that is. And there's a doctor, I think he's in Pennsylvania, he's 69 years old, and he's up on murder charges. And I just hope that the more doctors get caught committing murder, and that's what they're doing. And it's a real horror show. He killed a grown woman, and he killed 8 babies. And Steve described how he killed them. And I'll tell you, if you're a decent human being, it will make your skin crawl. So thank you, Steve Malzberg. I call him and Mark Levin the Christian Menches. Yes. They defend the Catholic Church more than the Catholics do. Yeah, you know those Catholics, the ones that put ashes on their forehead that they steal from the boiler room of the church, Kennedys and Kerrys. Yeah, and Bugs Moran from Virginia. Yeah, Nancy Pelosi, or I call her Uday Pelosi. She's the only woman, she's the only speaker, I call her the sneaker of the house, who went to Syria with an entourage larger than Alibaba's, and she licked the ankles of Bashar al-Assad while Americans down the street and Iraqis were having their faces, arms, and legs blown off, and all of the IEDs were coming from Syria. And she went there. It was one of her first responsibilities as a good communist, faking to be a Catholic. Yeah, if she's a Catholic, a Moses was an Apache. Okay, so having said that, then we also have the boys who believe in the Second Amendment. They're coming under a lot of fire. So I was cleaning out a desk, and I came across a wall poster, and I thought I would read it to you. It belongs to it belongs to an American who brought it home from camp, when he went to camp. And the title of the wall poster is "My Rifle." This is my rifle. There are many like it, but this one is mine. My rifle is my best friend. It is my life. I must master it as I must master my life. My rifle without me is useless. Without my rifle, I am useless. I must fire my rifle true. I must shoot straighter than my enemy who is trying to kill me. I must shoot him before he shoots me. I will. My rifle and myself know that what counts in war is not the rounds we fire, the noise of our burst, nor the smoke we make. We know that it is in the hits that count. We will hit. My rifle is human, even as I, because it is my life. Thus, I will learn it as a brother. I will learn its weaknesses, its strengths, its parts, its accessories, its sights, and its barrel. I will ever guard it against the ravages of weather and damage. I will keep my rifle clean and ready. Even as I am clean and ready, we will become part of each other. We will. Before God, I swear this creed. My rifle and myself are the defenders of my country. We are the masters of our enemy. We are the saviors of my life. So be it until there is no enemy but peace. The creed of the United States Marines. God bless the United States Marines. Hang in there and we'll give you a tune. Let me see if it came up. Let's see. Okay, it didn't come up, so I'll give you one that I did catch as I was... Ah, here it is. Oh. Okay, it didn't come up. All right, we'll give you this one.
My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride, from every mountainside, let freedom ring. Let music swell the breeze and ring from all the trees, sweet freedom song. Let mortal tongues awake, let all that breathe partake, let rocks their silence break, the sound prolong.
Just to make sure the Second Amendment is still working. Even if you don't use it, put it in storage. One day you may have to learn how to use it in a hurry. Yeah, this country is going to be taken apart three different ways this Sunday. And one part will be from the inside, which they're working on real strongly right now. And did you see President Bin Laden bowing to Moman Thai? Moman Thai is Chinese for no problem. Anyway, I'm going to give you a little dissertation. This is something I blogged to today. Somebody was labeling Chris Matthews as a nut job. So you know what I did? You know the look on the, you know the guy that did the shooting in Arizona? I took his picture and I put it next to Chris Matthews and Steve Malzberg, and then I put Hillary's underneath that, and also Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and who was the last one? Oh, I can't remember who the last one was. And then I said, I hope they don't shave their heads next. I have to tell you, Rush Limbaugh, this is what Chris Matthews said on Chinese Communist MSNBC, owned by GE, who was owned by the Chinese Communists. I have to tell you, you don't think that that stealth jet got on that Chinese runway by accident, do you? Yeah, somebody had to help them. And it wasn't just Wikipedia. I believe Wikipedia leaked all of that, the 250,000 documents. I think they leaked that to the public, but the good ones they gave to the Chinese. But the Chinese don't have to get them from Wikipedia because they have access to the Pentagon websites and Pentagon computers. As a matter of fact, they tied them up for 3 hours one day, downloading. Yeah, the Pentagon is ready for nothing. I have to tell you, they're talking about suicides in the military. Let me tell you, if I was in the military with that Pentagon, I'd be committing suicide too. I have to tell you, this is what Chris Matthews, Rasbanjani said. I have to tell you, Rush Limbaugh is looking more and more like Mr. Big. Listen to this now. They talk about Sarah Palin. And at some point, somebody's going to jam a CO2 pellet into his head, and he's going to explode like a giant blimp. At some point, is somebody's going to jam a CO2 pellet into his head? How's that? And you know, when Obama got elected, the first thing I said was, I pray to God that nobody harms him. I pray to God, for the sake of the country, no harm comes to that man, no matter what he does to us. And he's doing a lot. And you know why I pray to God that no harm comes to him. I just don't want to see another Manchurian candidate ambushed. That day may come. This is what he's talking about. He said the CO2 pellet in the head is going to explode like a giant blimp. That day may come, not yet, but we'll be there to watch. How's that? This guy's already, that's premeditated murder. He should be dragged out. He should be dragged out from behind his little pulpit. I think he's Mr. Big. I think Yaphet Kotto. Are you watching, Rush? This guy is nuts, man. This guy is nuts. And he'll tell you he's a Catholic. That's the one that really cracks me up. Yeah. And Judas was one of the 12 apostles. Yeah. And that's Chris Matthews talking about Rush Limbaugh. So I did my retaliatory blog. Clinton dodged the draft. Matthews hit out in the Peace Corps. Both pardoned by Jimmy Carter. Clinton for cowardice and Matthews for bad guacamole dip in Swaziland. Mental illness usually goes unnoticed on Marine Killing MSNBC. I gave them that label a long time ago when they sold out a fighting Marine in Fallujah and they tried to crucify him. He had just lost about three buddies in that building before, and he was in another building and he shot a twitching Al-Qaeda, who happened to be an elderly gentleman. But you know what? We elderly gentlemen know, as long as the trigger finger's working, everything is working. And this kid finished him off rather than be finished. And he did the right thing. And he should have got the Congressional Medal of Honor. But they're not giving them out anymore. Now that they've sissified the military, they're only giving out congressional earrings. You know, shit. I'm pardon my French. We're in trouble. Yeah, we're up the fat lady's burka. Way up there. Mental illness usually goes unnoticed on Marine killing MSNBC. And you know how they did it? They brought out a Congressional Medal of Honor winner who called the Marine jazzed up. How's that? How's that for betraying one of your own? They do that all the time. They'll bring out somebody that says, I'm a Catholic and I'm for abortion. Yeah. And I have a suit made of prophylactics. Yeah. There was a comedian on last night. As soon as he said we should legalize weed, the audience went wild. You know what? One day that audience is going to be in their own killing fields, and it's going to make Cambodia look like a Hollywood and Vine. We're in trouble, man. We are so wide open. We are face down, pants down. We don't have a chance. We lost our country and we're never getting it back. You can call me a pessimist. I'll call you a POW. And I'll be right before you're right. The Anti-Wind Network, that's what I call Marine killing NBC. And you see all these guys, all these 14 top businessmen are all sucking up to China. You know why they're sucking up to China? Because there's a billion 300 million customers over there, and we're only 300 million. So we're not in our own manufacturers are turning away from us. Yeah. I don't know if it's true or not, but there was scuttlebutt a couple of years ago that one of the aircraft manufacturers was talking about moving his plant to China. How's that? Which ones are going to be? Lockheed? Boeing? Yeah, I don't know. Boeing don't have to move. They're in Washington, right? Yeah, that's China already. The sad truth is that NBC and GE are run of, here's what I said. The Anti-Wind Network. All Chris needs is a Mao hat and a Che t-shirt. The sad truth is that NBC and GE are run by Red China. How do you like the new people's stealth bomber? It looks like just like the American one. Did WikiLeaks give the good stuff to China? They only gave Lady Gaga songs to the FBI, who was late for work again. 250,000 times 2 downloads missed by the CIA. The same outfit who knew bin Laden was coming but did not know where or how, because they had no windows in the office and nobody leaves the building. The only thing protecting us is a handful of real Americans in the military being sissified and our superior technology, which is almost gone. We're hitching rides with the Russians to go to outer space. NASA is on its last legs. And here the Skunk Works built the stealth bomber and worked on it for years, and nobody knew we had it. And now the Democrats can't keep a secret. If you want to know what's going on in Washington or in top secret circles, just get to the barmaid that's pouring Senator Leahy his 10th drink. The only thing protecting us is a handful of real Americans and a military being sissified and our superior technology, which is almost gone. And the next war will be over in 3 hours, and those of us unlucky enough to survive will be making shoes in concentration camps in the winner's country. Say goodbye to two more flag burners, Kent Conrad and Joe Liverwish. 40 days before 9/11, these two senators voted to burn the flag. Now they leave office with treasure, less 40% for the Chinese. You lost your country, and you're never getting it back. Call me a pessimist, and I will call you a POW. How do you know you're not brainwashed? And tonight, we're doing Chapter 8 of Red Cocaine. So hang in there while I switch hats and open up the Red Cocaine book for Chapter 8. We didn't finish Chapter 7. We have about a paragraph to go. So let me get that Chapter 7, and then we'll swing over. And in Chapter 7, let me see where we left off. the goals were to speed up the goals of the communists are to speed up the revolutionary process, to create political instabilities, to force the United States to pay more attention to domestic issues like rehab for Junior, and less to international problems, and to create echo racism. Well, that they've succeeded in 1,000%. The concept of echo racism was a product of several years' research and study. The Soviet idea was that in the United States, it is money that is most important. Okay, so this is especially true among the black people, whom the Soviets believed were more motivated by material factors than by political ideals. That is, they thought in economic terms rather than in political terms. So you see how the Soviets analyze every American citizen, his weaknesses, and how he can be played? As the Czech delegation reported after visiting the United States in September 67, the minorities, mostly black people, did not understand that freedom for them meant socialism. When we spoke to them about communism, we were met with hostility and anger, the delegation explained. But when we discussed economics, the anger of representatives from the minorities immediately focused on the inequities of the capitalist system. Accordingly, the delegates recommended that propaganda work should indeed focus on economic inequities rather than on communism and its benefits. With respect to black people, numerous tactics were identified to speed up the revolutionary process. Racism was to be promoted because it was a destabilizing factor. Racism was to be promoted because it was a destabilizing factor. I say every day, those who divide us will destroy us. Operatives were to be directed at youth, since older black people were believed to be too intimidated by the white establishment. Narcotics and propaganda were to be employed to revolutionize the black people. Black unemployment was to be promoted. Emphasis was, you hear that? Black unemployment was to be promoted, because when you keep them down, and when they're down, you can manipulate them. Emphasis was to be placed on the concept of taking or making the whites give in opposition to the concept of black people working for a living. This report also emphasized the need to bring Hispanic and black minorities together. Hispanics were believed to be already well into drugs, and by bringing them into closer contact with the U.S. black people, the use of drugs in the black communities would be accelerated, and boy, did that work. The principal target of drugs would be, but let me tell you, it's working all over the country today. You got kids that were raised, what's the Pennsylvania religion, where they ride in the wagons, they don't have electricity, you know the one I'm talking about, and they've got a drug problem. The principal target of drugs would be to be the lumpen proletariat, that is the unemployed, who were concentrated in the inner city ghettos. By pushing drugs into this group, crime and general erosion of Western moral values would be stimulated, because the use of drugs destroyed judgment and led people into crime, homosexuality, and other activities conventionally considered immoral. The drug distribution chain or sequence in the United States was analyzed in a report. The problem with the chain was that the majority of top bosses were white, while most of those who made up the base of the sales pyramid were black. Two changes were therefore required. First, it was necessary to promote more black people from street level into the organization and management level. Secondly, it was necessary to bring Hispanics into the organization. This was deemed advisable to avoid upsetting the Hispanics and also to avoid the undesirable problem of black people being the only minority in control. The report recommended making these changes as operations expanded by promoting and training black people and by bringing in Hispanics as the new markets were opened. The combination of blacks and Hispanics would then be more effective in pushing drugs into the lumpen proletariat, the unemployed, which the Soviets believed was dominated by black people and Hispanics. Together, black people and Hispanics would form a, and then it's a Soviet, it's four Russian words, or a United Citizens Defense Front. The thesis of the report was that drugs pushed into the minorities would create incurable political destruction. The estimate presented in the report was that by the year 2000, people with a lack of morals created mainly through drugs, people who were willing to take whatever measures were necessary to support the revolution, would have expanded to encompass at least 42% of the population. I often say that 25% of the population is required for a revolution. That's what it was in the American Revolution. Only 25% stood against the crown and put their lives on the line. And if we go below 25%, we will never be free. And here the Russians and the communists are working on 42% of the population. And I say in America today, one out of five Americans is a junkie. That's only 20%. And the Russians are shooting for 42%. It is in its 1989 report on crack cocaine, the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency concluded that large-scale interstate trafficking networks controlled by Jamaicans, Haitians, and black street gangs dominate the manufacture and distribution of crack. The distribution of crack, which grew so rapidly in 1986, appears to be much more of an organized operation than a simple natural phenomenon. Crack rapidly became recognized as the most dangerous drug to hit America. As William Bennett, director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, explained on CBS's Face the Nation on August the 13th, 1989, drug crime is up, drug trafficking is up, drug deaths are up, drug emergencies in U.S. hospitals are up, and the reason for all this is crack. And if you want to see the casualties of drugs, go to any emergency room on a Friday, Saturday night, a little after 11, and see what gets wheeled in the door. Two appendices of the DEA, a report on crack, contain data provided by field agents on individual cities. Throughout these brief city summaries, the groups dominating the manufacturer and distribution was shown to be Haitians, Jamaicans, Dominicans, and U.S. black people. Trafficking was most prominent within the lower-income inner-city areas, particularly in black and Hispanic neighborhoods. While little was said about the wholesalers, two groups were identified, Cubans and Colombians. The entire discussion of the nature of distribution and sales suggested a well-organized and managed operation, an operation designed to use black people against black people. The reality in 1989, I enjoy the saying, you're being played. You know what that means? You're being played, you're being used. And that goes on all day long in America, and politicians do it all the time. The reality in 1989 thus wholly matched the Soviet strategy operations and underlying rationale laid down more than 20 years previous. These people have long-term plans. This Chinese guy that was here today hardly cracked a smile. He's looking at his new subjects. Could this really have been just mere a coincidence? No, it wasn't. And that brings us to... Now, this guy's got a ton of footnotes. Ton of footnotes. Anyway, okay. So we know that the black community is infiltrated with drugs. But the sad part about it is there's only a handful of fighting back. And you know who they are? They're the ones that are mocked the most. They are the small churches, the small black churches with aunts and uncles and good people, and they're trying to keep it all together, and every day they fight the devil, and every Sunday they sing God's praises, and they're mocked for it. And who mocks them? Take a look at who mocks them, because that's your enemy. So here's chapter 8, Cuba and the Rise of Narco-Terrorism. On November the 15th, 1982, the American public was treated to a rare display of candor. That was the date on which four important Cuban officials, including two influential members of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of Cuba, were indicted by a grand jury in Miami on charges of conspiring to bring drugs illegally into the United States. The indictments of high-ranking Cubans opened the floodgates. A stream of additional indictments followed, the more important of which were those of Jorge Ochoa and Carlos Letta Rivas, reputed Colombian drug kingpins. Norman Saunders, the chief minister of the Turks and Caicos Island, Frederick Nigel Bau, a high-ranking Bahamas minister, Everett Bannister, chairman of Bahamas World Airlines, and a close associate of the Prime Minister, Lyndon Pindling, Colonel Jean-Claude Paul, the strong man of Haiti, poor Haiti, huh? Frederico Vaughn, a high official in Nicaragua's intelligence service, Panama's military dictator, General Noriega. Well, a lot of things are said about George Bush the first, the elder. But one thing that he did do was he got Noriega. Manuel Ibarra Herrera, former head of the Mexican Federal Judicial Police. Poor Mexico. Mexico bleeds and bleeds and bleeds. And would you believe that they send Mexicans up here to try and get a part of the southern states back to Mexico? The day is going to come when more than a million Mexicans are going to pour across this border begging for political asylum. You're going to see refugee lines that you haven't seen since World War II. Okay, so we said the Mexican Federal Judicial Police, Miguel Aldana Ibarra, former head of the Mexican branch of Interpol. How's that? They're all dirty. And what makes them dirty? Money. It is hard to resist money. You know those Catholic school nuns that said avoid the near occasions of sin? They were right on the money. They were right on the money. That little simple rule that they told you as a baby, as an infant, avoid the near occasions of sin. If you're sitting in a jolly old crowd and they're passing the roach around and you don't want to do drugs, you're going to take a toke. But if you weren't there, they would miss you on the pass around. First, there are close linkages between drug trafficking and terrorist revolutionary activities, hence the term narco-terrorism. These have led to a breakdown in law and order that, when coupled with drug-related corruption, is bringing about the destabilization of a growing number of important countries. So the Soviets, like Jimmy from Brooklyn says, the Soviets win when they win, and they win when they lose. So here they're making money on the drugs, and they're taking down the country. Okay, where was I? In many cases, the growing number of important countries that are taken down, notably Colombia and Venezuela, Peru, and Mexico. Venezuela's already gone communist. All right? And now Obama is sending recruits to Cuba to learn how to get a PhD in communism. A master's degree. And this basic phenomena is not limited to Latin America. It is also present in varying degrees in the Middle East, Southeast Asia, and Africa. I've seen pictures of guys in Afghanistan and Pakistan where they slit their skin, where they slit, they put slices in their arm to put heroin, direct feed heroin. And their arms, they look like they're scarred up more than a stitched baseball. Secondly, while a vast number of people involved in drug trafficking do not appear to hold any particular political philosophy, there is a disproportionate involvement of Communist Party officials, government officials from communist countries, agents from. These are weapons of war. Drugs is a weapon of war. Communist intelligence services and Marxist revolutionary and terrorist organizations. Thirdly, within the Americas, Cuba stands out. Cuba is clearly involved with numerous drug trafficking operations and provides many functions, from recruitment to transshipment facilities, command posts, equipment supply, production and manufacture, transportation, sales and marketing, and they finance the deals. And finally, while money is always present as an obvious motivation, insofar as higher officials involved with trafficking are concerned, the political dimension, specifically political warfare against the United States, is even more important than the money. As a Soviet revolutionary center in the Caribbean, Cuba is the operational center for drug trafficking and for the training of revolutionary terrorists. Nicaragua was becoming a second revolutionary center and was active in drug trafficking and in harboring and training revolutionaries. Cuba provides a safe haven for Latin American drug traffickers en route to the U.S. For this, the drug traffickers pay a fee. On their return trip to South America to pick up more drugs, they transport ammunition and supplies from Cuba to the revolutionary terrorists. For example, to the M19 forces in Colombia. The manner in which narcotics trafficking and revolutionary or terrorist organizations operate together can be seen in the reports on Colombian and Cuban operations or revolutionary groups provide protection for the drug traffickers. The drug traffickers help finance the terrorists and revolutionaries and furnish them with information, intelligence, and the transportation assistance. In Colombia, the Marxist M19 revolutionaries have close ties to Cuba, and various drug traffickers, of which the most highly publicized over the year has been the organization known as the Medellin Cartel. The cartel has close ties to Cuba, Nicaragua, and other countries. The principal linkage between the Medellin cartel and the M19 are explained by Jose Castillo, former Consul General of Panama, is the Cuban ambassador Fernando Renedo. Ravelo works for Manuel Pinheiro Losada, the head of the Americas Department of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of Cuba, and former head of the DGI. The American department has special responsibility for subversion and sabotage operations in the Western Hemisphere, including disinformation, terrorism, and drugs. And this was the position prevailing, of course, in 1990. In Colombia and other countries such as Peru, terrorists provide the drug producers with protection from the local police and military forces. The drug producers are alerted to possible raids. They pass data to terrorists who then ambush and kill the forces conducting the raids. This is good for the terrorists and for the producers, who in return provide funds, territory, and supplies the terrorists need. As another example, when government officials decide to clamp down on drug traffickers, the terrorists assist the traffickers by terrorizing and killing officials, as they did in the case of the mass murder of the Colombian ministers of justice who were taking steps to extradite certain Colombian drug lords. The terrorists provide additional muscle when bribery is inadequate. Generally, bribery has worked quite well. Corruption through bribery is rampant in the Bahamas, Mexico, Colombia, Bolivia, Peru, Costa Rica, Haiti, Panama, the Caymans, and Brazil. By using terrorists to perform violent acts, drug traffickers are able to maintain their image as businessmen with wide-ranging influence, but still just businessmen. Hang in there. Drugs is big business, isn't it? The drug traffickers are therefore from a government's official point of view, good people to get along with, people who can pay for services. They bring money into the country and provide jobs. Look at all the banks in Florida when they were on that cocaine spree. You think those bankers were looking out for America? So what? If they also provide a product with which damages capitalists. If the terrorists who are the bad guys, it is the terrorists who are the bad guys. While this logic is blatantly fallacious, it is amazing how many people accept it and promote it, including many high-ranking officials in the USA. Let me tell you, the higher up they are in the USA, the less they know, the more stupid they are. You know who knows? The guy on the street. He's got a nose for it. He can smell it. The precise origins of narco-terrorism are uncertain. However, there are a variety of facts that point to its gradual emergence, perhaps more as a result of evolution and circumstance than direct planning. First, as reported by Sejina, that's the Czech officer who defected, the current Soviet strategy, drugs is a Soviet strategy involving narcotics trafficking, terrorism, and organized crime, had its roots in about 1955 when Khrushchev set about modernizing Soviet subversion and putting the world communist movement back on course following Stalin's death. I read this, you can Google it to confirm it. In 1953, Stalin was getting ready to do what Hitler did to the Jews. He was getting ready to purge all the Jews in the Soviet Union and make them disappear. And God gave him a stroke. Check it out. See if it's not true. There's also a story about Molotov's wife. Stalin found out she was Jewish, and Molotov was his right-hand man. And he had Molotov's wife arrested, and Molotov didn't say boo. The three activities, drug trafficking, terrorism, and organized crime, provided complementary functions, and the Soviet bloc activities in all three areas were managed by the strategic intelligence sections in the KGB. These intelligence sections perform only special tasks of strategic importance, the most important of which, as indicated earlier, are strategic espionage, drugs, narcotics, terrorism, deception, and sabotage. Now, speaking of deception, you have been watching this circus that began about 2 weeks ago, and you know that little nine-year-old girl, they hardly mention her. They mention everybody but that little nine-year-old girl who was the saddest victim in that shootout in Arizona. But what disappeared from the news that is no longer being covered? A cybersecurity expert in the U.S. military who was found in a dumpster. You remember that? So Americans have short memories. You can take anything away from an American, he'll squawk for 3 days and then forget about it. And that's how our enemies think. So that, and you know that guy was, he was a pretty hefty guy. I think he was 6 foot. I think he was about 220 pounds. And he was thrown in a dumpster that was over his head. It had to take three guys to throw him in that dumpster, unless one guy got on the top and pulled him up as the other guy pushed him up. Okay? And also, what else disappeared from the news? 1:10:11. Breaking news. Sources have confirmed that a woman found dead in a burning car this morning in a garage behind a Capitol Hill home is Ashley Turton, Director of Congressional Affairs for Progress Energy Incorporated and wife of Dan Turton, the White House Deputy Director of House Legislative Affairs. Progress Energy is preparing a statement about her death. Never heard anything about it. And that's the old shell game. You're looking for the pea, and they give you a banana. Okay. So where are we? The three activities, drug trafficking, terrorism, and organized crime, provided complementary functions.
and all three areas were managed by the KGB. The combination of narcotics and terrorism was also identified in the 50s and the 60s by Dr. Ray Klein, a former deputy director of intelligence. Central Intelligence Agency. How about the intelligence chief retired that went canoeing and drowned? Yeah. How about Jack Ruby getting cancer in jail? What was that guy's Mitchell, Martha Mitchell? She also, she said she's going to get Jack Rubied, and sure enough, God only knows what's going on. The only thing you got to have an honest government. If you don't, you're screwed. I have observed with horror the growing links in many areas between the three groups. I have observed with horror. For the most part, Marxist-Leninists, anxious to create a state subordinate to the Soviet Union or one of its surrogate states, like Cuba. The narcotics traffickers who need the protection that such revolutionary groups can give them and are willing to pay for it. Yeah, I heard that Fidel Castro's worth $670 million, and his people are trying to eat still life paintings. Yeah, I did it all for you, Cuba. He liberated Cuba, didn't he? And he only uses one boot on their neck. And he's been in power for, what, 50 years? He must be a great leader. And Che Guevara, Hugo Chavez is getting ready to do the same thing. Only he's going to bring Iranian missiles to Venezuela. And he's going to point them at the United States. And Obama's going to immediately fly down to see if they got enough. And he'll take some that he's given to the Russians and give it to Chavez. We got a bad president, and we are losing our country. And if we don't get it, I don't think we can wait 4 years for this guy to finish up. And they're already saying that he's going to get reelected. And we got to impeach this guy. And the best way to do it, he's got no proof of citizenship. The governor of Hawaii can't find his papers. So that's the way to bring him down. It's the law. Give him the old law routine. The narcotics traffickers who need the protection are willing to pay for it, and they pay for it with the proceeds of drug traffic, and then the gun runners. And what kind of guns are being sold? AK-47s. Who makes those? Disney World. The people in, they're always talking about American arms. America is selling arms all over. I don't see no American arms. Oh, we're selling the big stuff. Listen, let me tell you, the little stuff does a lot of damage. All you have to do is be in Kuwait when they celebrate liberation and shoot all the bullets up in the air. See how many people die when the bullets come down. And then there's a Russian with an order pad, or a Chinese with an order pad. More bullets? You want more bullets? In the case of Bulgaria, the connection between drug trafficking and terrorism was clearly evident in the 70s. Kintex is described by various sources of having dual tasks. The movement of drugs into Western Europe and the movement of guns and ammunition into the Middle East. These are not totally independent activities, insofar as drugs are often accepted as payment for the guns and ammunition. The method of operation had been connected with many terrorist organizations. For example, Jacques Kier, director of the DEA, National Intelligence Center at El Paso, Texas, gave unpublished testimony November 19, 1975, to the House Armed Services Committee. And you know what I just found out today? There's no more Radio Free Europe. Or there's no more Voice of America. They've given it another name. They've sanitized it. And someday we're going to need the Voice of America right here in America. He stated that 5 out of 10 known Mexican Marxist groups are known to trade Mexican heroin and other drugs for U.S. guns. Similar data exists on revolutionary groups in Venezuela, Dominican Republic, Brazil, Colombia, Peru, Burma, Panama, and Bolivia. But notwithstanding its early origins, the United States did not begin to wake up to what was happening We are slow to wake up. We're not going to enjoy. You know, Patton said in one of his closing speeches that we have been the arsenal of freedom, but he worried about the next war because we wouldn't have time to come back from the first strike. I'll get that speech out and read it some night. Florida on charges of conspiracy to import marijuana. Let's see what it says here. Cuban officials were indicted, along with 10 others, by a federal grand jury in Miami. Conspiracy to import marijuana, methacolone, from Colombia to the United States by way of Cuba. The Cubans charged were Rene Rodriguez Cruz, an intelligence official and member of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of Cuba. Aldo Santa Maria Cuadrado, a vice admiral in the Cuban Navy, and also a member of the Central Committee. I wonder if we got a Central Committee in the White House. Fernando Ravelo Renedo, the Cuban ambassador to Colombia, and then ambassador to Nicaragua. Gonzalo Basso Suarez, a former minister and counselor of the Cuban embassy in Bogota, and member of the Communist Party of Cuba. The ensuing publicity brought narco-terrorism out into the open for the first time. Oh, the media must have been busy trying to cover that up. The witnesses who provided the principal evidence at the ensuing trial in 1983 were Juan Crump, a Colombian lawyer and drug trafficker, who negotiated with ranking Cuban officials for Jaime Aguayo Lara, a leading Colombian drug trafficker, David Perez, a Cuban-American drug trafficker, who met the boats and delivered the goods into the United States. And remember, the Miami cops were all crooked. They were all bought. Mario Estevez Gonzalez, a Cuban intelligence agent who had infiltrated into the United States during the Mariel boat lift, who received narcotics from Cuba, sold them in the U.S., and then returned the proceeds to Cuban intelligence. Colombian Johnny Crump was asked to use his influence to obtain Cuba's assistance for the trafficker Jaime Lara during the ensuing negotiations with Cuba's ambassador Fernando Renedo and his deputy Gonzalo Suarez. Lara wanted confirmation that if a drug shipment were lost, he would not have to pay the fee to Cuba. Then they say Ravelo and Basso's, they don't worry, they can wait, and they don't care about the money because the goal was to hurt the United States full with drugs. And we could end this tomorrow by telling Junior that he can't use his allowance to buy drugs, including weed. Why would you smoke weed when you know that smoking is not good for you? Let's see where we are. The trafficking philosophy was also reported by Mario Estevez, who said he was ordered to load the United States up with drugs. We are the number one consumer of our own product. We have the most money to spend on any product. And the fact that we're not spending it on each other and each other's business to help Americans grow is a sign of American weakness. The philosophy is especially interesting when considered alongside the known Soviet strategy, the objective of which was to bring about the intellectual stagnation of the United States. That's happening. By means of the mechanism of achieving a maximum flow of drugs into the country, as discussed in Chapter 7. Estevez further testified that he was directed by his DGI superior to make contact with drug traffickers in Bimini and in the United States. During his drug trafficking career, he imported over 270,000 kilos of cocaine from Cuba. He said he sold his cocaine to individuals in Miami, Chicago, Ohio, New Jersey, New York, and other cities. He took the money he was paid to Cuba, where he delivered it to the Cuban government. It was during one such trip that Rene Cruz, a senior official of the DGI and ranking member of the Cuban Communist Party, put his arm on Estevez's shoulder and said how nice it is now that Cuba had a drugstore in the USA. You don't think we're being taken down? We're taken down one stone at a time. Incidentally, Rodriguez Cruz was one of the Cuban officials who helped organize the Mariel boat lift used to infiltrate Cuban intelligence agents into the USA. According to testimony provided to a U.S. grand jury in Miami, it is the government of Cuba that is trafficking drugs and narcotics into the USA. See, that's why Obama wants to go. He wants to go direct. Cuba is also providing support to terrorist operations throughout Latin America. Both Fidel and Raul Castro are directly involved, with Raul the more active participant, and he's about to take Fidel's place. The operation is secret and is run by Cuban intelligence. Watch how chummy Raul gets with the Obama people. And that's all Democrats that are going there. They all have been licking Fidel's boots for years. Now they can... they can go tongue to leather. Further, as was explained in congressional testimony in 82 by Gerardo Peraza, a former official in Cuban intelligence throughout the 60s, there was extensive cooperation between the DGI and the Soviet KGB. And then the Cuban intelligence was placed directly under the direction of KGB Colonel Viktor Simonov. Okay, let's see what else we got here, because I'm running out of time. We got 3 minutes left. I'll do one more paragraph, and then we'll say sayonara, and we'll continue when we meet again. Major Florentino Aspiaga Lombard was a career official in the Cuban DGI until his defection, ultimately to the United States via Vienna on June 6, 87, from Czechoslovakia, where he was stationed. He confirmed that a powerful drug syndicate had been using Cuba since 1978 as a transshipment point for illegal narcotics into the United States. Protection was provided by Jose Abrahantes, a Castro deputy who was Minister of Interior. None of the drug-related activities could have been carried out without the personal approval of Fidel Castro. In 1988, the role of Cuba in drug trafficking was further confirmed by Major Antonio Menier, a Cuban intelligence officer and chief of security at the Cuban embassy in Budapest, and he defected. He elaborated that the Cuban government participated both directly and indirectly, and that special troops of the Interior Ministry were used to coordinate operations. So we're going to finish off. We got 2 minutes left here. I'll give you a tune on the way out. And next time we talk, we will do the rest of Chapter 8. And this is why we shouldn't be opening the doors to Cuba, and all it's going to do is bring more drugs to the United States. And it's your kids who are going to be using them. So hang in there, I'll give you a tune, and in case I don't get a chance to say sayonara, sayonara.
Come true, if there will never ever be.